Welcome to the Sportscast, September 17th, 2020. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, Periscope, iTunes, and YouTube. And if you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review. It will help us out tremendously. And visit us on thesportscast.net, thesportscast.net for the latest and greatest. This episode is brought to you by InstaBible. You can get the InstaBible app on the iOS App Store. Sports are pouring in. Big Ten. They've announced they're coming back this October. Pac-12, they're set to announce a start date by tomorrow. Tiago, Cantara is joining Liverpool as of today. And Bale, Gareth Bale, might be joining Tottenham. The whole announcement will be coming soon. And we got Ryan Krista, a man that is feeling the loss after a Broncos loss on Monday. Ryan, welcome back to the Sportscast.
Santiago, it's good to be here. It's just had some soccer news, but you know, we got a lot of college football news. Another week of college football to be played starting here very soon.
Yes, and before we head into our special guest, tell us your quick summary of what happened to the Broncos on Monday night.
Well, it was just a back and forth game. Both them and the Titans left a lot of points on the board, had a lot of momentum going up 7-0, and then Melvin Gordon fumbles. Titans take advantage. I mean, the Titans struggled kicking, you know, with Steven Koskowski, which gave the Broncos a chance. But Broncos had a chance to put a nail in the coffin, started a drive at the 40-yard line with a few minutes left. Couldn't do that. Gave the Titans life, and then they end up kicking the last-second field goal to break our hearts. We lost three games while leading with 30 seconds to go last year, and just another year of bad finishes for the Broncos. But definitely, a lot of good things from Drew Lock, though. A lot of promise by Jerry Jeudy, even though he had a couple of big drops. But they were shorthanded without Courtland Sutton. So, and that, we're building.
And also a great performance by Noah Fant. At least,
Your fantasy team, it was.
For my fantasy, yeah.
Yes.
So, anyways, Ryan, I'll let you do the honors. What's going to happen right now?
We're bringing in special guest here, former four-year starter at Rice University. Taylor, I don't want to butcher. How do you say your last name?
Yeah, it's McCarg. The U is silent.
Okay, McCarg, who is a group of five insider for ESPN. So we're going to, you know, we got a lot of major news, you know, ACC, Big 12. They're all playing, but, you know, Big 10 is coming soon. But, you know, there's a lot more football besides that across the landscape. And no better person to bring in than Taylor to catch us up on preview some of the other conferences this year. Taylor, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, you know, like you said a little bit, I cover Group of Five, played obviously at Rice and Conference USA, and call games as an analyst, TV analyst for Rice, and then a handful of other, you know, trying to figure out what my schedule is going to look like the rest of this year. COVID has shuffled a few things around, but bread and butter really is covering the Group of Five. And and TV analyst is really the games on Saturday are my favorite. That's obviously the what you do it for, but the sport, as you guys know, goes year round, so there's always something to talk about.
Taylor, can you tell us your time at Rice as a quarterback, and tell us, how was Rice back then?
Yeah, it was interesting. When I got recruited off of the 2008 team that was it was really good. They won 10 games, and I showed up, and we struggled my first couple years there. We weren't really very good. But the last couple years we were there, had a lot of success, won our bowl game in 2012, and then actually won Conference USA, had a 10-win season in 2013. And what was interesting about that stretch of time is how many guys we put into the NFL. There's still quite a few guys. I think we have 8 or 9 right now that are on active rosters. And a lot of those guys were there when I was playing. And just for Rice, it was just an interesting stretch of time where we put quite a few. I saw this the other day. I couldn't believe it. We have more guys on active rosters right now than Baylor does, which you wouldn't think to be true. But it was a fun time. Enjoyed playing there. And winning 10 games and winning our conference was definitely the highlight.
So, Taylor, now, did you play in a game when Johnny Manziel set out the first half opening day? Were you playing in that game?
I was. Yeah, that was a big game. That was a noon kick. Johnny was suspended for his autograph. That scandal is probably too strong a word, but played in that one. It was a close game, and then they pulled away late, obviously.
Scandal is a big name when it comes to Manziel. Anyways, go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I remember that game because I remember you guys kind of going score for score, even when, you know, Manziel came back in the second half. You know, you definitely had a high-octane offense that year up and down the field.
Yeah, it was again, we had quite a bit of talent, a couple NFL guys on that team. That, you know, two guys before that that weren't on that team, but the year before, you know, Vance McDonald with the Steelers and Luke Wilson with the Seahawks were our two tight ends. So not common to have two NFL tight ends on a, you know, on a Conference USA roster. So it was a 2012, 13, and 14 were all bowl seasons for Rice, and that was the first time that had happened. It was, you know, for Rice is not known for its football, right? So any stretch of time like that, there's a lot to be proud of.
So give a little plug for Rice. What is Rice known for?
Well, Rice is first and foremost, it's known for its academics. I mean, I just redid the rankings. I think it's 15 or 16 in the country. So it's a great school. And then for the longest time, it was baseball. I mean, they won the national championship in what was it, 2003? Haven't been that great lately, but when I was there, it was still very much a baseball school.
So let's head into college predictions of, you know, for these conferences. Obviously, they're not the Power Five. They're a little bit, I mean, I don't want to say this rudely, but a step down from the Power Five. Conference USA, how do you see it with this season?
Yeah, to be completely honest, through the first, you know, couple weeks of the season, Conference USA has not looked very strong. I think performances really in CUSA West to this point have not looked very good. I think Marshall early on looked really strong. Now, they didn't play a very good Eastern Kentucky team, but they still looked really sharp and not a lot of mental errors, not a lot of penalties or turnovers. Still need to see FIU, still need to see more out of UAB. Want to see FAU, FIU. The East, to me, still feels stronger than the West. And I know I just got done shamelessly plugging Rice, but there is quite a bit of production coming back for them in CUSA West. And from what I have seen so far early in the year, I would not be surprised if once Rice gets going, they make quite a bit of noise on the Western side of the conference. But we'll see what happens. Conference USA, there are always there's always a surprise. There's feels like every year there's somebody that pops up that you weren't expecting. There's a guy, you know, Michael Collins, just transferred from TCU that is now going to be the starter at Rice and was a pretty good player when he was at TCU. So we'll see. But again, to this point, have not been very impressed with what CUSA has rolled out so far.
Who do you think will be the huge surprise from this conference?
Well, I think on the Eastern side, I think FIU will surprise some people. I think FIU's they've got a lot of production coming back. And then in the West, I hate to say it again, I feel like I'm you know, beating a dead horse here, but the dark horse in my mind would be Rice because they've got so many people coming back. I think in Conference USA, I know they have the most production coming back, but on a national level, they're like top five in defensive production coming back. So guys that have played a lot of football, Mike Bloomgren's third year there, I would say both of those teams.
So talking about the Conference USA West, and kind of big surprise news early on was the resignation of Jay Hobson from Southern Miss. Do you have any idea why, you know, why he would resign after 1 week? If there, what could be going on there?
Yeah, I think a combination of a couple things. I don't think they had the buy-in. I don't think he had the buy-in from the alumni, the boosters. And I'm not really sure why. There are conversations inside the building that we obviously aren't privy to. But Hattiesburg didn't love him. And to see somebody have to resign after a week one loss, especially in this climate, I mean, you would think going into the season with everything that's going on in the world, you would think you buy yourself more time, that you're going to get more, you know, leniency, if you will. But it obviously was not the case for him. And I think from his time there last year and then the beginning of this season, I think the players and fans had, you know, begin to lose faith in him.
Yes, I agree. I mean, Southern Miss is kind of a, you know, not a major name, but, you know, more of a household name than a lot of the teams in Conference USA. And I think expectations, you know, are always a little higher for Southern Miss over a lot of the other Conference USA teams. I mean, it's tough because, you know, I think they do have, you know, I think one of the best passers in Conference USA and Jack Abraham. Yep. And if they put it all together, I think this is, you know, an above average team that could compete definitely for the West with UAB. What are your thoughts about North Texas? I know they lose Mason Fine. What else do they have on the roster? I know they have a big game coming up this week against SMU. What can we expect out of the Mean Green?
Yeah, they're always going to be in contention. I think they're well coached. If you watch their game against HBU, they move the ball really efficiently. Biggest thing for them is going to be on defense. I thought they gave up quite a bit to HBU. Now, HBU then turned around and went to Texas Tech and gave them more than they wanted. But North Texas is another one that I could see absolutely winning the CUSA West.
Absolutely. So let's move to the East. Marshall, we'll talk about this game later on against App State, but they have, you know, a freshman quarterback who kind of lit it up against Eastern Kentucky last week. What about Marshall do you like this year?
Well, he's their quarterback first and foremost. When you watch him against Eastern Kentucky, again, I know that Eastern Kentucky was not very good, but he was fitting the ball into a couple really tight windows that were really impressive. Marshall just looked like they were getting back to their old form on offense. There was a stretch there where they really weren't playing that well on offense, and I think they're bouncing back from that. And they looked really solid. Now, it'll, you know, we've got to see what happens moving forward. But they've got a big week coming up against App State. I think this is a chance for both of these teams to show where they're at in terms of the trying to be the top dog, if you will, in the shouldn't say top dog in G5 because I don't think either one of them would beat some of the, you know, the Cincinnati's or the Memphises. But both of them should be in a position to have strong seasons.
Now, with Willie Taggart going back to Florida Atlantic, do you think he can pick up where Lane Kiffin left off with the Owls?
I wouldn't say where he left off, but FAU, it feels like FAU always has a ton of talent. I mean, as long as they've been around Conference USA, they've always had guys. They've had guys that you didn't even really think about going into the season, and then they come out and they've got studs. But Willie Taggart, I think, you know, first year, there are other people in CUSA East, Marshall, potentially FIU, that I would put ahead of them.
And we'll talk about Western Kentucky about in their game coming up this week with Liberty in a little bit. Were you surprised how much Middle Tennessee struggled against Army?
I was. I really was. I watched Rice's game against Middle Tennessee last year. Rice actually won, and I still thought Middle Tennessee had their, you know, quarterbacks coming back, had some returning starters, had some of their skill position coming back, but they looked flat against Army. Not very physical at all. I mean, Army really took the fight to them. And it's tough right now also. It's easy to lose perspective in this year. It's very likely that you're going to see two different teams for a lot of these schools. You're going to have the first couple weeks of the season where they're still figuring out. They didn't really have a normal camp. They're not getting their normal non-conference slate. I think it's going to take some teams a little while to warm up. I mean, you saw what happened to BYU did to Navy, rather, where Navy really didn't do any tackling at all. You know, Ken Niumatalolo came out and said that all they've been doing is hitting bags. And I'm not saying that that's what Middle Tennessee did, but it remains to be seen what they're going to, you know, be throughout the rest of the year, obviously.
All right. In closing, we had to pick two winners from each division, or the winner from each division. Who is it going to be?
Yeah, I'll go Marshall in the East and North Texas in the West.
All right. Santiago, we'll move on to the Sun Belt Conference.
Sun Belt Conference. Let's do it.
Who had what? I mean, we don't – no need
What's
to
going
introduce
on,
this conference
with the Sun Belt
last
conference?
Week. Yes. Who had a great week last week, you know. Sun Belt, Fun Belt. You know, I'm going to miss hopefully these Tuesday night games about the Sun Belt in, you know, November, you know.
Yeah.
Those are always fun. What should we know about the Sun Belt Conference, Taylor?
Coastal.
Yeah, so the story is really at the top of the conference. I mean, you get farther down, you know, the Louisiana Monroes are still not very good. Texas State had a chance at winning a couple of both of their games so far this year. But I think the story is the three teams that we saw last weekend. I mean, Arkansas State beating Kansas State, Coastal over KU, which Coastal should not have been a surprise to most people. They had a ton of kids coming back, and they had already beaten Kansas last year, so they weren't afraid of them. ULL over Iowa State was the one that the way that they beat them surprised me the most. They made Iowa State completely one-dimensional, and Iowa State really did not play very well. They had a ton of drops on offense. But if you look at, you know, go to Arkansas State, they played Memphis really close, and I think Memphis is a pretty solid football team. And then they go on the road and come back on the road against Kansas State. All three of those wins were really impressive. And I think right now the Sun Belt is ahead, at least at the top. I would put the Sun Belt, and it'll really be when we see App State play Marshall, that'll give us a good gauge on where is the Sun Belt in relation to Conference USA. Right now I'd put the Sun Belt ahead of CUSA, and especially if App State were to go out and beat Marshall.
I mean, if you think of a bottom feeder that's supposed to be bottom feeder in South Alabama, who's come out, you know, we talked about them beating Southern Miss last week, you know, and, you know, competing against Tulane. I think, you know, the depth of this conference is, you know, better than it normally is. And I think the top is good at App State. What can you tell us, you know, a little bit more about Georgia Southern? You know, I know they struggled against Campbell, a team that, you know, as a Liberty fan, we got to know last year in the Cure Bowl, but.
Yeah, there's a couple teams I recognize from this conference.
Yeah, that's another one that a lot of youth, it's going to take them some time to get their legs underneath them. I would actually, you know, you guys candidly may know more about them than I do because you guys followed them last year in their bowl game. But that's another team that it's, again, like we talked about, it's going to take some time for some of these teams to get into a rhythm in their season.
Yeah, I know last week they ended up losing. I think they had 33 people out on their roster against right. Campbell. I'm just saying, I don't even know how they really should have been playing that game. But
which is a testament to them that they went out and won with that many guys out.
Who knows? I mean, because you're going against an FCS team, but, you know, when you're out 33 people, so that takes your scholarship advantage. And lastly, with the East, can you tell us a little bit about Troy, what they have to look for?
Yeah, Troy, it's another one that year in and year out, look, any Sun Belt school that goes in and beats LSU at any point, you know that they recruit well. They're always going to have playmakers. I think that's going to be another one that once they get rocking and rolling, don't be surprised if they throw their hat in the mix along with these other teams that we've highlighted in the Sun Belt to go out and compete and win the Sun Belt.
Recently, the Raging Cajuns defeated Iowa State. How significant was that for the Sun Belt?
Well, yeah, again, like we talked about, that all three of those wins over the Big 12 were meaningful, and the way that they beat Iowa State was the most eye-opening, if you will. I mean, they came out there and took the fight to them. They were in it the whole game. It never got away from them. They weren't having to come back. I think the final score was 31-14, and that was a statement win on the road. I know that there's not crowds right now, but college football – traveling on and getting on the road, you almost always, there is still an impact for the visiting team. It's not like the NFL. There is an impact to traveling in college. And I was just really impressed with how they played and shutting down an Iowa State offense that a lot of people thought was going to be much more impressive than that. And it was a big deal for them. That's a big win for the Sun Belt.
I mean, I think the Sun Belt, yes. I mean, it's a breeding ground for, you know, players, but also I think it's a breeding ground for coaches. I don't think Billy Napier is long for Louisiana. I think he's one of the most up and coming coaches. You know, what he's continued to build off at Louisiana is great. And what Blake Anderson at Arkansas State in itself is a breeding ground for coaches. You know, Brian Hartson, Hugh Freeze, Gus Malzahn, a lot of coaches come through the Sun Belt to direct their career to bigger and better things.
Yep. Totally agree. Yeah.
So give me your predictions in the Sun Belt. Who do you like in East and West?
Oh, in the East, I'll go App State, and in the West, I'll go ULL.
All right. Sounds good. Well, now let's go to what they wouldn't like to be called a group of five. You know, they like to be known as the Power Six in the American Conference. What can you tell us, Taylor, about what we should look forward to in the American Conference this year?
Yeah, I think the American really comes down to three teams. I think it's Cincinnati, UCF, and Memphis. And I think those three teams sort of rotate. We talked about this yesterday morning on ESPNU. Those three teams kind of rotate their home and home with each other. There's not one of those teams that get both of the other two at home or on the road. And I think their schedule lays out to where there's sort of a challenge in the middle. All three of these teams have a challenge in the middle of the schedule and a challenge at the end of the schedule. And I think there's a very real scenario that one of those three teams could run the table. And depending on what happens with the Big 12 in particular, and potentially the ACC, there is an outside chance that the AAC, if they can run the table with somebody, they can get somebody into the playoff. But the first thing's got to happen. They've got to have somebody go undefeated, and then they've got to get some help. They've got to have one of the Power Five schools with a two-loss champion. Which if I had to pick one that may happen to, I'd say it's probably the Big 12. I don't see anybody beating Clemson. If the Big 10 gets in the mix on time, I don't see anybody. Ohio State should win the Big 10. And then the SEC, even if there's a one-loss champion, I still think they get in. But
I agree. We all agree on that. One loss for the SEC is good enough.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. So those three teams at the top for the American, and then SMU, I thought they looked okay against Texas State. Again, like we've talked about, got to get their legs under them. This is a bizarre year. Having Shane Buechele back is big, and I think they're going to have a solid season. I think they're more likely to cause trouble for somebody down the line and upset somebody than they are to be one of the ones that goes and runs the table.
Obviously, you know, marquee team UCF, you just said Memphis, Cincinnati. Other than those three teams, and you talked a little about SMU, who else do you like in this conference? You know, maybe Houston? I mean, maybe then, you know.
Who's your dark horse?
Yes.
Yeah. Dark horse, I actually think Tulane could make some – I was about to say could make waves, which would have been a horrible joke. But Tulane and Houston have pieces coming back, and – Navy, I don't think Navy, what we saw from them from BYU, I know they obviously looked horrible that night, but quarterback play for the first time in a long time for Navy, I don't think is going to be very impressive this year. But Houston, Dana Holgorsen, I think this is his third year there now. That's another school that could throw their hat in the mix and potentially upset a couple of these teams on the road.
Which they might have a chance to this week, you know, with the crazy thing about 2020 is games being thrown together literally, you know, in a week. You know, we have Baylor and Houston coming up who weren't even on the schedule, you know, a week and a half ago, and now are featured on Fox at 12 o'clock, which is kind of crazy. Yep. So who do you pick coming out of the AAC?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the usual suspects. I think it's going to be some combination of the three teams we just talked about. UCF, their offense is so explosive, quarterback's coming back. And Cincinnati's got a lot of – they've got 16 of their starters coming back, quarterback's back as well. I would go Cincinnati and UCF.
All right. Good things.
Now, from all these past three conferences, how would you rack them? Who goes first, second, and third?
Yeah, right now it'd be the American and then the Sun Belt and then CUSA. I think CUSA is going to have to – have some conference play is going to have to shake out it, and you're going to have to see some more impressive wins and then some parity in the Sun Belt, some teams, you know, upsetting one another. But early on, like I said, Conference USA has not looked very good at all to me. And I think the Sun Belt top to bottom just looks better right now with the American obviously being, you know, first among that group.
I told you, Ryan. What's yours, Ryan?
Yeah. I put you on the spot, Taylor. Who are the five players in the group of five you're looking forward to watching this year?
Oh, you are putting me on the spot.
It doesn't have to be five.
No pressure, Taylor.
Just your top players. Top players.
Yeah, no kidding. I got to make sure I get his name right. But quarterback for Marshall, Grant Wells. Quarterback at App State, who I'm going to completely blank on his name right now.
Zach Thomas.
He's a stud. Shane Buechele, I think, is going to have a big year. And then Dylan Gabriel for UCF, maybe the player of the year out of all of these guys at the G5 level.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, UCF has got a quarterback-friendly system, and no matter the last couple of years, you know, they just have athletes on the outside who can, you know, the speed is a big difference in the group of five.
Yeah.
So moving on to, you know, important games this week, particularly in a group of five, and I think going back to the Knights of UCF, you know, they got a big game against Georgia Tech. What do you think are the keys in this game?
Yeah, keys for UCF are just to get out. If they can get out to an early lead, Georgia Tech's not built to chase them down. I think Georgia Tech, the way that they played Florida State is the exact type of game that they want. They need it to be close. UCF last year had the second most productive offense in the country behind LSU. They put up, I forget what the exact number is now, but 500-plus yards a game. Again, only team ahead of them was LSU. If they have that kind of offensive production, they're not going to have, I don't even remember what the line is right now. I think it's like 8 or 9. I think if I were a betting man, I would have it on UCF. Georgia Tech needs some turnovers to keep that close.
Did you, what did you think about the freshman from Georgia Tech, Jeff Sims, at quarterback?
Yeah, I thought he stayed within himself. I think the biggest thing with this early slate of games, he didn't get them beat, right? And that's the biggest thing for a young freshman quarterback is don't go out and turn the ball over a bunch and just keep your team in the game. I think he did a really good job of that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I like you said, I think if UCF can get this game into the 30s, I just don't think Georgia Tech is enough offense. But that's saying, you know, this is important game for UCF and AAC because if they can get this win, and Georgia Tech has already got a road victory against Georgia, against Florida State, you know, that could really propel the AAC into being able to sneak into, you know, that playoff if things don't go well.
Which is my other question. Obviously, you know, we're looking at other conferences coming into the fray, especially from the Power Five. Do you think any of these conferences have one team that could potentially go to the playoffs if the playoffs happen?
Yeah, the UCF is the one that makes the most sense for a lot of reasons. I think the first piece is that they have the talent. They've got the guys around them to actually be able to do it. The second thing is I don't think they would be the team least gun-shy or afraid of that spotlight. They've kind of already been hanging around the hoop already in the national spotlight over the last 3 or 4 years, 5 years. I think if they go run the table and you put them in the Final Four, I think they're your best shot to actually win a game in the Final Four and beat somebody while they're in the Final Four, where somebody else might sneak in, like a Memphis, and I don't think they're going to – you saw what happened to them last year against Penn State in the Cotton Bowl. I think there's a potential you'd have a repeat scenario there. But UCF would be my team that if they got in, would feel like they belong the most.
Sure. Now let's go one more game to preview in the group of five. Huge game that moved up to CBS on 3:30 on Saturday, and that's Appalachian State and Marshall. What do you think are the key to this game? And just before we get to I don't know – something to kind of look for in the next little bit today is now that UNC Charlotte, who played App State last week, had to cancel their game against North Carolina. And there is, I think, a chance because of contact tracing issue that App State may be in jeopardy of playing this game because there's a breakout on the UNC Charlotte's offensive line. So that's something that hopefully this game gets played, but I think it is in doubt right now as we speak. But if they do play this game, what are the things you're looking forward to, Taylor?
Yeah, I completely agree. And sort of as a sidebar, I think we've got to get comfortable, if we aren't already, with games getting canceled and games getting postponed. This is going to be a fluid situation. The Big Ten especially, the protocols that they rolled out are, extremely stringent. 5% of your team gets it, and you're shut down. If you have it, it's 21 days that you're shut down. So I think it's going to be tough for them to get their full season in. To get back to your question, both of these teams, especially when I look at Marshall, they've got to come out and play their game. The easiest way for Marshall traditionally in the past where they play themselves out of a game is they can't move the ball on first and second down. They end up in third and long, consistent passing down situations. And App State would love that. That would play right into their strengths. I think the biggest thing is for both teams, take care of the football and convert in the red zone. This is not going to be a game where you get into the red zone and swap field goals for touchdowns. They've got to punch the ball in once they get in the red zone.
Awesome. Yep. Definitely these last couple weeks have been a week to kind of focus on a group in five because they get these marquee games on, you know, national TV. It's a great promotion, exposure, not just for their programs and their conferences, but for the group of five in general to put on that good show, kind of i.e. that SMU and Memphis did last year in prime time on ABC.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, so I hope this game gets off, and I hope they're able to, you know, whoever wins, they just, you know, put on an entertaining game for the nation to see. Last game, I don't know how much you know about me and Santiago's alumni or school they went to, Liberty, goes against in our opening week against Western Kentucky. What can you tell us about the Hilltoppers, Taylor, is Liberty University?
Yeah, I think the problem, you know, the thing that stuck out to me last week is their Western Kentucky's quarterback, what he was able to do against Louisville, and both with his arm and his legs and moving around, that's going to present some challenges for Liberty. The thing that stands out to me about Liberty is they, in their first year at the FBS level, they make a bowl game, and that, what is that, the second or third time that had ever happened? I don't think Liberty is going to be, you know, they're certainly not afraid of the stage or afraid of any of these players, but Western Kentucky traditionally has a pretty prolific offense. It was not as close a game, the Louisville and Western Kentucky game. It wasn't as close as the score would lead you to believe, but Western Kentucky does have some talent. And I am interested to watch it. For you guys, like I said, you guys are obviously the alumni. I would ask you, what are y'all's expectations for this game for Liberty?
So, you know, with Liberty, you know, they lose their top, you know, four-year starter quarterback, Buckshot Calvert. You lose a four-year prolific wide receiver, Antonio Ganigoldi, who's playing on Sundays for the Redskins.
Yep.
So you have a lot to replace, but you're replacing it with, you know, a Calvert a bunch of, you know, good wide receivers, no one again to Goldie's level, but you're replacing, you know, Calvert with a former SEC quarterback in Malik Wayne's and from Auburn, you know, I think had accuracy issues, and that's why he's not playing in the SEC anymore, but he's a big, strong athlete who's going to, you know, I think they're going to go back to the up-tempo, Heath-Reese, you know, hydro speed pace on offense, and that's their calling card. Last year, I think with Buckshot being a pocket passer, they kind of move not at, you know, a slow pace, but, you know, an average speed. But I think they'll see a push the tempo up, you know, because they have depth at wide receiver and running back to kind of match it. But I don't know if they're going to be able to contain Pigram on defense. And this is a guy who went into, you know, Texas a couple years ago with Maryland and, you know, upset the Longhorns. So this is a guy who's played on the big stage, and I think this might be a little too much for Liberty to handle this week, but I think overall, I think this is year two under Hugh Freeze. I don't know if they'll go bowling. I don't even know if there will be bowls, but, you know, I think you're looking at probably a 500 season, you know, because you still have three ACC games. You know, they play at Syracuse, at Virginia Tech, and at NC State. So I think 500 this season would be a success for Liberty under year two.
I agree with that.
So in Santiago, any predictions end up to finish up with?
You know, with Liberty, obviously the expectations are high. We'll see how it goes. Really excited for this year. And, of course, Western Kentucky, like you guys were saying, are a pretty pretty great team. So we'll see what happens. But, hey, I mean, we're optimistic, right, Ryan?
Yes, we are.
We'll see how Hugh Freeze does. SEC mentality and Liberty, which here's my question. Should Liberty go to the, you know, would Liberty go to one of these conferences, Conference USA, the AAC, or like the SB? Like, which one do you guys think, if they had to choose between the three, which
one?
Well,
I think a couple years ago, they were hoping, you know, to get into the Sun Belt, and it really came down to, you know, when they're picking that last member, it's Coastal.
I know.
And Liberty, and they chose Coastal. You don't want to get political or, you know, for religious reasons, but I think Coastal, this was the safer choice at that time. But, you know, there's definitely advantages, maybe not during COVID years, but there's definitely advantages to be independent, to be able to schedule freely and, you know, get these, you know, once in a while get these marquee, you know, non-conference match, you know, well, everything's non-conference, but these marquee matchups, you know, we got BYU coming to Liberty in the next couple of years, and they have several games at home with Virginia and Virginia Tech coming up. So it's definitely good times for Liberty coming up in the future if they can just ride the course, because there's going to be ups and downs whenever you transition from division or from CSFBS. All right, any game predictions, Santiago, before we let Taylor go?
Yes, yes. Before we head into predictions, Taylor, what are your thoughts about the Big Ten coming back, really quick?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think they panicked early on with their decision. I think they've looked at, even when you have these breakouts, that kids are bouncing back and they're healthy. I think we haven't had a drastic case yet where it gives people pause and they need to shut everything down. So glad that they're coming back. I think that's creating a sense of urgency with the Pac-12, and even the Mountain West is having conversations today. I think they're like we talked about, their restrictions and their requirements for testing are really strict. It's going to be
difficult. I didn't know that. Blew my mind. That could be easily one game could be off.
Oh yeah. And the bigger piece is that they have a 21 day period that you're shut down if you test positive. So if you have a position group get hit, they're out for 3 weeks. So you're going to be forfeiting 3 weeks. I think the Big Ten, it's very likely that we get to the end of the Big Ten and they just have a hodgepodge of games. You know, some guys have played six, some have played four, who knows.
And when do you think the Pac-12 will resume?
From everything I'm seeing, the biggest problem that they had was with local government, particularly in California. It looks like they're going to try and get this thing not underway by the end of October. So I'm optimistic that it'll be end of October.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, I've been hearing like mid-November, also, you know, like late October, things like that. But they got to get things going. I don't know. I mean, I look at it as an asterisk season. I'm not sure about you, Taylor, but do you have that same sentiment, or are you a little bit more optimistic?
I don't know yet. It's too soon to tell. I think it's going to be something we got to see what the product is by the end of the year. And I know that that's I don't want to give some crazy hot take, but if you get to the end of the season and you're national champion, it feels like they waltz to it because there wasn't the normal competition, then yeah, there's going to be an asterisk. But if you have the usual suspects in the Final Four and it's solid competitive football at a high level, then no, I think it'll be maybe have a little bit of a blemish, but they're still going to be solid national champions.
National championship is all what matters. Let's go into game predictions. Syracuse, Pittsburgh. Taylor, who do you have?
I got Pittsburgh.
Ryan?
Pittsburgh.
Miami, Louisville.
Louisville.
I'll go Louisville also.
Oh, come on, guys. Really?
Sorry.
I'm a Miami fan, but I guess that's not good news if we're going to lose to Louisville.
Louisville's good.
All right. Who takes game two? Miami Heat versus the Boston Celtics. Taylor, who do you think will take it?
Give me the Heat.
All right. Now we're talking. All right. Ryan, I think you'll choose the Heat.
I'll go to the Celtics, Santiago.
Okay, Boston Celtics tie up the series, which was a really close game. Taylor, the Bengals at the Cleveland Browns.
I'm going to go Bengals in an upset, and I think you're going to start to see Cleveland revert back to Cleveland being Cleveland here pretty soon.
Ryan, Krista, who do you got, the Cats or the Browns?
I'm going to go the Browns, but I do agree. You know, it's always just fun to watch Odell and Baker go crazy on the sideline. So.
And one last prediction. Who do you think will win the SEC? Taylor?
Man, that's tough. I don't want to say Alabama. It's probably going to be Alabama. Man, it's not going to be LSU. I don't think it's going to be Georgia this year. I'll say Alabama. I don't want to, but I'll say Alabama.
And Ryan,
Santiago, I'm going to pick my Gators, Santiago. This is our year. Kyle Trask.
It could happen, man. This year is unpredictable. COVID is definitely leaving things on the frying pan, see what's going to happen. Taylor, what's the best way for people to reach you online to talk to you about Rice University's recruiting system?
Yeah, Twitter is the easiest, at tmcharg16, and it's tmchargue16.
And also, when can people hear you via ESPN?
Yeah, still working on schedule for games, but most of my radio is local in Houston, ESPN 97.5, Sports Talk 790, and then ESPN in San Antonio. And then semi, you know, every other week or so with the guys on ESPNU, Danny Cannell and Greg McElroy. But all that, I post whenever I'm coming on with anybody on Twitter. So at TMcCarrick16.
Has there been talk of you guys doing like the games from your homes itself?
Yeah, there's been, you know, I'll give you an example. Austin Peay versus Cincinnati this week is a remote broadcast at the booth that's here in Austin. They won't be on site. So there's actually more of that going on than I think people realize.
Quite interesting. We'll see how things are going. Things are feeling a little bit better, but of course, there's other parts of the country where they're feeling a little bit of a spike, or not much of a spike, more of like a pinch. Ryan Krista, what's the best way to reach you, to follow you along when the Broncos play Pittsburgh this weekend?
Mad Dog Report 18. Or again, on the Sportscast Twitter handle.
Yeah, I the Sportscast one. Who is your NFL team, Mr. Taylor?
Man, I grew up a Cowboys fan, but that's been a long road. They were last time they won a Super Bowl, I was in diapers, so that's been a tough team to be a fan of. But I would have to say the Cowboys.
We'll see what happens with their team. Obviously, the Washington football team is the only undefeated team in the NFC East. So quite interesting things, but of course things will change. Anyways, you can reach us at the Sportscast1 on Twitter or also via web, sportscast.net. And of course you'll see the latest and greatest when it comes to sports. Tomorrow we have Jeff Favre to preview week 2. Tonight we got Cincinnati, Cleveland. Guys, thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
Ryan, thank you.
See you later, Santiago.